Welcome to Enterprise Radio, the signature show of the Enterprise Podcast Network, featuring some of the most prominent business professionals in the world today. And now your host, Eric Dye.
This is Eric Dye, and thanks for tuning in once again to Enterprise Radio here on EPN. If you're not already connected with us on our various social media outlets, we invite you to do so by following us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, all at ePodcast Network. Today we're speaking with Mr. Scott Sambucci. He is the CEO and founder of Sales Qualia. He works with tech startups across the world, helping them ramp up and scale up their sales and teams. And Mr. Sambucci, thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio.
Thanks, Eric. I appreciate the Mr. part. I don't get that too often. It makes me feel old.
Well, we don't want to make you feel old, so we'll go with Scott moving forward here. So tell us, if you would, for starters, where and how should a startup find its first customers?
Well, I mean, the first thing we look at, especially in a B2B enterprise sale, is, if you started the company, you probably already have some industry expertise and you already have some industry contacts. So the first thing you should be doing is just looking at how you can leverage those contacts to conversations about the problem that you solve with the product that you have. And usually we tell our clients in that true startup phase, what you should be looking for is those first 10 paying customers as a way to prove viability of the problem product fit, meaning that you built this product assumably to solve a problem. Getting to 10 paying customers helps to start getting some viability around whether or not, in fact, you're solving that problem.
Definitely a good place to kick things off here today. Tell us, from your expertise, what are the four key reasons you feel every company would want to buy a product?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, when you just look at the raw metrics, if you're selling to another company, they're on the other side of the table. They're thinking about this from an ROI standpoint, or at least they should, your return on investment. And so the way that they're calculating that investment is one of these four reasons. So one is, does your product directly help me increase revenue? Or on the opposite of that, does your product help me reduce costs? So it's sort of a business decision. It's a business team. I might own a P&L, might be running a product line, selling to their customers. And so in either of those two cases, the net result, of course, is increased profit. Keep my costs the same, but help me increase revenue, I'll buy your product. If my revenue stays the same, but if I use your product, it helps me reduce costs. In either way, I win on the profitability side. The other two reasons are more what we call operational. And those two operational reasons are either to increase efficiency, meaning that whatever system I have, people I have, machines, computers, whatever that is, if you help me with your product to increase the efficiency or the output of those systems, then they'll be willing to buy. And then the fourth is risk reduction, meaning that if I use your product, it's going to help me to avoid risk or help me to avoid situations that could cause me to miss any kind of compliance or rules or regulations in the industry.
And of course, we certainly appreciate your input. They're most helpful in every regard. Now, also explain the Q framework and how it applies to startups selling to small to medium-sized businesses versus the Fortune 500 company.
Well, I mean, I think it works. It's designed to work in any kind of enterprise B2B sale, but the reason that I developed this framework and published it is, like, when you think about any startup, like you're starting your company, you're built your product, you're going out there selling to the market. A lot of times most people will sell the way they're sold to in the past. They're like, well, this is how people sell to me. They, you know, they send me a free login or they show me a product demo when I ask for it. And so you end up following that path and you realize, well, actually most people don't sell the product very well. And so what I did with this Q framework is make it really easy for a company founder who's never done sales before to identify really specific checkpoints along the way to know whether or not they're making progress in the sale. So the Q stands for questions. And the framework is designed for you as a seller to ask questions to identify whether or not you're moving forward with the sale. So the seven Qs or the seven questions are: number one, what problem am I solving? So going to a customer, somebody's interested in my product, what's the problem that we're going to solve with this? If we don't have a problem, we don't have a sale. Number two is, which segment or niche am I going to be selling to? Most startups try to sell too wide. Best thing you can do is stay narrow and get really focused on a niche. And then the third question is, who are my buyers? Who are the people in those companies I'm selling to that are going to be involved with the buying decision. So those first three questions are really just designed to help you focus. Where are you spending time? How are you establishing your outreach and value proposition? And who are the kind of people that you should be talking to in order to initiate a sale? The next two questions in that framework, number four and five, I always think about this as control, meaning that if I'm selling to another party, you know, one of the biggest fears most people have is a situation where now somebody may have been interested in my product, but now they're not calling me back. You know, I sent a proposal and they're not getting back to me. I showed them a product demo. They said they were going to talk to their team and get back to me, and they never do. So what we need to be doing as sellers is looking for opportunities for us to maintain control of the sale. So those next two questions are when and where. Questions four and five, when and where. So when, meaning when's the next step? Every meeting I go into, every conversation I have, I should know coming out of that meeting, out of that call, what is the next step here? When is that next step? So if I'm going to show a product demo to somebody going into that meeting, I should say, look, after I show the demo, typically coming out of this meeting, the next steps from here would be to talk to your IT team or talk to your procurement team. Does that sound good? Does that sound fair? And they go, yeah, that sounds great. Then you show the demo and you establish what the next steps are and when that's going to be. The where piece is just basically saying, look, I got to know where am I in this sale. I always think about enterprise sales as a big, long journey that can take months or in some cases years. And as a seller, I should have a map. I should know what are my checkpoints along the way. What are my stops? How do I know I'm making progress? Am I early in the sale, middle of the sale, late in the sale? And so being able to answer that question, where am I, is important for the seller to know what the process is for selling so that you're not at the mercy of the buyer's process for buying. So those are questions four and five. And then the last two are really kind of the money questions. That's the question six and seven are why and how. So why meaning why buy? Going back to that question you asked me earlier, why do companies buy products? Well, we got to show them, hey, if you buy this product, it will help you increase revenue or reduce cost or whatever that value proposition is. Because if we're selling our product and we hear from that prospect at the end of the sales cycle, look, you know, we looked at it, it looks okay, but gosh, it just seemed too expensive, or God, we just didn't have the budget. What they're really telling you is they don't understand, they don't see the value that you would be creating. So it's our responsibility as a salesperson to sit down with our customer, with our prospect, and say, look, if you buy this product, let's get really, really clear on how you're going to measure return on investment. So we got to be able to answer why. And then the last question is how, meaning how are we going to deliver that solution? How are we going to deliver that product and implement that product for our customers? And most people think of that as post-sale. Okay, we signed the contract. Now we get started. What do we do next? What I tell our clients all the time is that plan, that implementation, that future is part of the sale. You've got to give your customers a clear view of what's going to happen after they sign the contract and make that first payment. The more clear you can make it for them, the more confident they're going to be in taking action. Otherwise, they're going to feel like you're too big of a risk, and they're not going to be willing to take that final step that you need them to take. So that's the seventh question is how. Is actually using that implementation as part of the sale.
Well, I'd say that's some rich information coming from you, and really also appreciate your explaining the Q framework and how it applies to startup selling to the small and medium-sized businesses versus the Fortune 500 companies. Thanks so much. Today we're joined by Mr. Scott Sambucci. He is the CEO and founder of Sales Qualia. He works with tech startups across the world, helping them ramp up and scale up their sales and teams. He's joined us here today on Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Now, Scott, what's the biggest hurdle or challenge most startups have that you've seen when building a repeatable sales process for their company?
Well, I think that the biggest challenge is that the founders are not, or those founders are usually the first salesperson, right? And so what they end up doing is they oftentimes think about growing sales by hiring a salesperson or hiring that VP of sales. And they say, well, look, I got a couple of customers here. I'm just going to hire somebody to pick it up, kind of run with it at this point. And they're looking for a way to abdicate responsibility for the sale as quickly as possible. And it ends up being one of the most costly mistakes that any startup can make, because you think about, say, a VP of sales can be, depending on where you are in the country, a couple hundred thousand dollars a year in salary. And that person may be completely unknown to you. And worse, like if you're asking somebody to sell for you, you've got to tell them what's been working. Like salespeople are pretty simple-minded people. Like, give me the product, tell me the value proposition, who am I selling to, tell me what to do, how to sell, and I'll go do it. Most salespeople, very, very few salespeople you can hire that will help you actually build that process. So when we talk about building a repeatable sales process, what we're talking about is that early stage founder needs to be looking at, like, number one, how am I generating leads? How can I reliably look at leads coming into the top of my sales funnel every week or every month? What are the systems that I'm doing, that I'm using, whether that's email or LinkedIn or conferences? How do I know those are working? So that if I'm not doing the prospecting, I'm still finding leads. The second part of repeatable is thinking about, okay, now I have a deal in the pipeline. How am I doing my demos every day? Do I do it the same way? How do I know which way to do it is the right way? So that, again, I can pass that knowledge over to salespeople. And then on the third stage at the end, it's like, okay, now we get to the money conversation. You know, do we have a system for analyzing return on investment? Do we have a system for onboarding and training and making sure our customers are successful? So all of that needs to be at least a version, you know, we think of it in software world, like a version 1.0 says, this is how we're generating leads. This is how we're converting our deals. This is how we're implementing with our customers. If we don't get that repeatability, if we don't have some version of that ready to hand over to somebody, we're asking somebody to walk into a role where there's no framework. There's no systems for them to run. And that's going to make them way less expensive because they're going to be spending months just building those.
Great input there. Really appreciate that. And tell us also, how can you actually avoid one of the biggest mistakes most startups make? I'm sure you've seen a few out there over the years, such as hiring a sales VP, salesperson, or sales team too soon.
Well, I mean, the advice we give the founders is it should be pain to the point of being painful, right? It should be the point where if you think about those three parts of your sales process, leads, deals, customers, if you're finding you're at a point where like, man, I know if I were to spend more time running these systems, I'd get more leads. I just don't have the time. If I could just find somebody to do exactly what I'm doing because I'm doing it over and over and it works, that's a signal to know that it's time to hire somebody. The way to avoid it is to say, well, geez, I'm sitting here running my company. I don't know how to get leads. I don't know how to get new leads into the top of the funnel. Well, the mistake most people make is like, well, I guess I need to hire a salesperson to go get me leads. So the way to think about when to hire, when to avoid hiring is not, I don't know how to. If you don't know how to, then it's the wrong time. If it's, I don't have the time to, then it's time to go hire someone. So not knowing how is different than not having the time.
Scott, really great to have had you with us. A truckload of information on sales, and really appreciate all your expertise and information shared here today on the program. Before you go, any conclusion, any closing thoughts, a takeaway, one last final tip, or anything else you'd like to share along the lines of our conversation today?
Thanks, Eric. I appreciate it. I would say like the number one thing is, you know, with the book, just published a book called The Q Framework, called Stop Hustling, Start Scaling. And in that book, I detail chapter by chapter each of these seven questions in the Q framework. And at the end of each chapter, there's also a worksheet and activity. So it's really like more of a workbook more than a novel you're going to read from cover to cover. And as much as people can go over to Amazon and grab a copy, we actually provide a full and complete electronic version of that book, Stop Hustling, Start Scaling, right from our company website. So if people go over to SalesQualia, SalesQualia.com, right there on the homepage, there's a button that says Download My Copy Now. You click that button, pop in your email address, and we will send you a full and complete PDF of this book.
Wow, and you certainly can't beat that. What a value and what a resource. Mr. Sambucci, all the best. Thanks for joining us here today on Enterprise Radio. Certainly was our pleasure.
Thank you, Eric. Appreciate it.
And you're more than welcome. Our pleasure. We've been speaking with Scott Sambucci, the CEO and founder of SalesQualia. He works with tech startups across the world, helping them ramp up and scale up their sales and teams. And for further details and to download this book that he mentioned, visit salesqualia.com. And this is Eric Dye, and you've been listening to Enterprise Radio, a part of EPN, the Enterprise Podcast Network. Tune into our live location as we are streaming live 24/7 around the world at epodcastnetwork.com/live. You can also find our live stream on iTunes Radio and TuneIn Radio, as well as the TuneIn Radio app for your listening convenience. And as always, we thank you for your support and for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to Enterprise Radio. To subscribe to more of our programming, visit epodcastnetwork.com.
This is the ePodcast Network.